3.
Beloved 8% Hard AF Seltzer is now live in over 1,200 locations across the United States. We're now available in Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, North Carolina, Ohio, and Texas. Go to hardafseltzer.com today, click on the store locator, enter your city or zip, and find the nearest location closest to you.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com.
Yeah, welcome to Drinking Bros, kids. We got a banger of a Tuesday show this afternoon. Tulsi Gabbard is here.
Aloha. Thanks for having me.
Mahalo.
This has been a long time in the making.
It sure has.
I'm glad to actually be able to be here with you guys in person.
Did I respond correctly? You said aloha and I said mahalo.
Yeah, aloha or mahalo works.
To prepare for this interview, I watched Moana last night with my kids.
Oh, okay.
So I feel
like
I'm
ready
in touch.
To bust out in song?
I can.
I tried to get these assholes to
play it as you were walking in. As you were walking
that
in.
That would have been pretty awesome.
Yeah, they're fucking cowards back there.
I can do the old man voice.
Okay.
Moana.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
That's pretty
good. Off the cuff.
Yeah.
You know?
They're coming out with a second one.
They are. Here. And they're doing a live
this
action
time
version as well.
This time it's personal.
It sure is, yeah.
It's like Moana too. She's got a chainsaw and shit.
She's ready.
Yeah, she's going after
taking
the fires.
Taking on like the full warrior persona, I
she's going to stop the fires in this one.
Yeah.
Look.
Oh, she's going to go up against Oprah then.
She sure is.
Yeah.
Is that what happened? Do you guys believe in that conspiracy theory that Oprah started the fires?
No. No.
I'll just
start there.
I think Billy Joel did, to be honest with you.
I don't know if Billy Joel, what is he, 5'3"? He's not starting fires.
He's starting fires. He had a huge song about it. Tulsi, you're in a crazy moment in history right now.
Yeah.
You're rumored, we'll get to the bottom of it here, to be the potential VP pick for not one, but two presidential candidates. One came from D'Anthony Holloway himself.
Okay.
Thought you were going to run with RFK Jr. Now, I had read that as well, and it was a fun story at the time. It appears as if he's picked somebody as of yesterday, the entrepreneur chick who nobody's ever heard of but has a lot of money.
Correct.
Bryn something?
No, that was her ex-husband.
Sergey Brin was her ex?
Yeah.
So yes. Sergey Brin is one of the founders of Google.
Yes.
Oh, gotcha.
That explains all the
Larry
money.
Page.
Yes, and he needs money, apparently.
I don't know. RFK does. I was thinking of Sergey.
No, Sergey is all set.
Sergey does. Yeah, he's fine, but RFK does.
Yeah, you know, running for president in any situation costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. I think the average candidate this year is going to spend $4 billion. For the two major parties, last time was like 2.5 total, and that's including
that includes the super PACs and all of kind of the, but to also I mean he's chosen a very hard path. It's hard to run for president in general. He chose a Democratic primary, then dropped out midstream and decided to run as an independent. And to run as an independent, you're taking on both political parties and the propaganda media and big tech and all of these forces who essentially profit and benefit from being a part of the cabal of the power elite. And so to have someone who's able to run a serious campaign as an independent is a threat to them. So the money thing as and this is a whole topic in and of itself, but the money thing, as much as you might not like it, is a practical reality when you're essentially waging an information warfare, information warfare, as they are.
Yeah, because it's costly.
Yeah.
And you got to get all these people on your side. You got to go out there and buy them out.
You've got to have, like, they ran a $7 million ad during the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Debatable whether that was the best use of $7 million when you don't have a lot of money. But, you know, that's what it costs. You got to get your name out there. You got to get your message out there. And what I found when I ran for president in 2020 was that, you know, even on a, like, who knows if there's going to be presidential debates this year. That's a valid question, that this norm that's existed forever, it may not happen at all. And for a candidate like Bobby Kennedy, I know he's counting on and has been counting on being able to stand on a stage with President Biden and President Trump and have that opportunity to make his case to the American people. I don't know that he'll get that.
Oh, that's definitely not happening.
You don't think so?
No.
Well, do you think Biden will even sign off on any of these debates? Because if he doesn't, Trump's not going to.
I think
Bobby doesn't get a shot on stage.
There's an outside shot they'll pump him full of Adderall like they did the other day for the State of the Union and let him go after it. But it's risky, man.
I mean,
I think it would be more likely than a direct one-on-one debate. It would be more town hall style where the moderators only ask questions. But you know Trump, right? He's just going to go off.
Yeah.
Right. So, and the debates are important, especially for a candidate who's trying to get their name out there. We'll go back to you, for example. That's how I found out about you.
Yeah.
When you were on stage going up against Kamala Harris and absolutely eviscerated her, overnight, everybody knew your name. Tulsi Gabbard. And you were the one who essentially got her to drop out of the presidential race. Yeah. That's what it felt like. Now, I don't know what the real story was behind the scenes. But
yeah,
that's,
you know,
that's
what
made you famous overnight.
What was interesting is, and still people I run into all the time, in the airport or wherever, like that's usually one of the first things they say is like, you were the one who took out Kamala. I'll tell you behind the scenes, some of my friends who are working in some of the green rooms or the newsrooms at that debate. And, you know, they have this whole thing after the fact where you go in and you have like the media is all in one room waiting to talk about this and rehash and everything else. That when that happened, there were people in the green room for CNN and these other things. They were cheering. Mm-hmm. Finally, someone told the truth about Kamala Harris and her horrible record as a prosecutor, as attorney general. And I thought that was interesting that they were also afraid to bring it up themselves, even though it was obvious, and that they were happy to have the truth out there. But to the debate formats, I forget how many debates I participated in, but on average, I had 6 to 8 total minutes of talking in a 2-hour long debate with 10 people on the stage.
You got to make the most of it.
Got to make the most. Yeah. And that
was enough to point out that she kept people in jail for weed forever.
Right. Exactly.
And hid exculpatory evidence and enforced the Biden crime bill.
And the hypocrisy of her doing that. And then going, I think it was Charlemagne's podcast, and they asked her if she smoked weed. She started laughing. She's like,
yeah.
Like it was a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Just like for the sake of honesty, I'm high right now.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
No. Every day, I assume you're on something.
I'm not on weed though. Right?
Is it life today?
High
on life.
It's
like that.
It's that crocodile stuff that eats your skin. I'm a full-on Florida man.
Oh, big fan of that. Yeah. But
we're gonna watch a real life transformation happening here.
Oh, we're going through the Florida man videos for the next 3 hours.
Love
here.
It.
Kidding. It's not a 3-hour show. But with you made the most out of that 8 minutes. And to me, I was like, finally, because I lived in California. Mm. When she was attorney general there and all that stuff, the DA there. And I knew what she had done.
Yeah.
But unless you live there, you don't really know. And you're able to hide some of these
stories. People in California know. People in California, and it's shocking to me that Gavin Newsom keeps getting elected and stuff.
Yeah.
And Kamala before him, because they're the architects of all the horse shit that happened in San Francisco, the stuff that London Breed doubles down on now and pretends she's part of the solution for, which is... That's my favorite part of politics right now is her being like, we got to do something about crime. Like,
and she's the mayor of San Francisco.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, you're paying people $85,000 a year to walk around and collect human shit off the ground instead of just, like, arresting people like we normally do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it shows how dangerous some of these politicians are, though, that a guy like Gavin Newsom and Kamala Harris, they can, you know, make their way through. California politics is a whole thing in and of itself. And I've never lived there, but I've been told how completely corrupt and rigged the system is because of the unions and all of these special interests that will get their person into position. You know, the well-being of the people be damned, essentially. But I think the record of Gavin Newsom in California, obviously he wants to run for president. He wants to be president.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to have to be a lot of people telling the truth so that people don't fall for charisma. And I don't know if you saw that debate he had with DeSantis.
I did.
It was interesting.
I've never seen that's one of the that debate was almost as bad as like Al Gore versus Admiral Stockdale back in 92. I don't know if you're about my age.
When he pulled out the hearing aids?
Yeah, Admiral Stockdale, he had spent 6 years underground in a Vietnam prison camp, right? So, you know, I mean, no offense, but he was basically retarded at this point. And he just kept saying, I'll have to get back to you on that over and over.
And then he finally, mid-debate, he pulls out his hearing aids and he goes, I'm all done here. I'm all checked out here.
Yeah, he's like just some salty old dude at the VA that's had enough. Yeah.
I think Phil Hartman played him on SNL, which was a perfect casting choice.
But like, it's interesting when you go into a debate armed with just the facts, right? Because Newsom's a piece of shit. And, you know, whatever you think about DeSantis, he's done a pretty good job in Florida. Yep. I'm sure you can find a complaint about anybody, but just like some of the claims that Newsom makes about the state of California. Mm-hmm. When I say the state, I don't mean the physical state. I mean like the state that it's in right now. It's like demonstrably untrue, right? You can just go look that shit up. You would think in the age of the internet that where you can just go look stuff up on the internet, people would lie less, but they've lied more.
More. Yeah. And it's in our faces more. And that's something I wanted to ask you about today. Yeah. I know you've got a book coming out here on April 30th for Love or Country. Do you get into the debates there? And then these candidates like Newsom and everybody else that's coming down the line?
Yeah, this book, For Love of Country, the subtitle is Leave the Democrat Party Behind. And I go into my own experiences of having been 21 years old in Hawaii. I was running for state house and why I decided to join the Democratic Party. Because I didn't come from a family of like, you know, my dad was a Democrat and his daddy was a Democrat and all of that. My parents are very independent thinkers, raised us, fourth of five kids. I'm the fourth of five kids, raised us to be independent thinkers. And so in the book, I really talk about why I made that decision then, the experiences that I've had now for over the last 20 years as a vice chair of the DNC, as a member of Congress for 8 years, as a candidate in a Democratic presidential primary, and really exposing the truth of how corrupt this system is and how these people, especially now, and the foremost reason why I left the Democratic Party, they're motivated by power and willing to destroy anyone and everything, including the Constitution, in order to hold on to that power or get more. And so I go into a lot of different examples of exactly what that looks like, how they're doing it, and who is impacted. And it's not just people like in working in politics. It's affecting us in almost every aspect of our lives, no matter where you live in the country.
Mm-hmm. In all your social settings.
Yes.
If you go to dinners or meetings or you're playing with kids, it comes up. Politics comes up now. It didn't used to. 15 years ago, nobody cared, and you could still, you know, break bread with somebody. Now
it comes like up. Your uncle, right?
Yeah.
Like there was one uncle at Thanksgiving, and he was like, JFK is a fucking communist. You're like, maybe.
I
never met the guy.
He's not alive to tell me differently.
Yeah. It's amusing.
Yeah.
It used to be fun, but
it's not anymore, and now it's become a hard line.
It's a hard line where, you know, people are demonized, actually demonized. If you have a disagreement on an issue or you like one candidate or another candidate, you know, families are disowning family members. Friends are just like, no, I can't talk to you anymore. That's happened to me. It's happened to so many different people because what?
Yeah.
Political differences. And really to me, what it comes down to, and this is both the problem and where I see the solution as we head into this next election, which is the most critical of my entire life, where our ability to live in a free country is on the line. Nothing less than that is what's at stake. And so the problem is we have far too many people in power, both in government and outside of government, both elected and unelected bureaucrats, who only care about power and they don't care about our constitutional republic, our actual foundation as a country. Too many Americans have gotten sucked into this hyperpartisan divisiveness that many people have forgotten who we are as Americans first and what we stand for, what this country stands for. So to be in a position now where it's an open point of discussion, like, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't have freedom of speech in this country because of hate speech and disinformation. And, you know, you go down the laundry list of excuses that's being used to censor people. The fact that is an actual point of conversation in many circles points to the deep problem that we have. And also the solution where if we come together around those fundamental values of freedom and get out and vote, throw out the people who are abusing their power and put people in both parties who at a minimum are committed to upholding the Constitution, that is how we begin the process to get back on track.
And with you personally, from what I've read, and correct me if I'm wrong here, your father's not real amped that you're Republican and has made some statements recently saying, I don't know what's going on over there, and I have no idea what's happening in that party.
You've obviously hacked into our family chat.
Have I?
No.
Did I do that?
No.
Sorry. The group chat. What is it? What's your family
group
chat?
Well, it's on Signal, so you know you probably weren't able to
access it. It's White Lotus, season one. Yeah, that's your group chat over there.
No, my dad and I are best friends, and like I didn't even know that he talked to USA Today for this article, but he sent me the article. He's like, they took me way out of context. I recorded the whole thing. They screwed up. My dad's a state senator in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. He is the chair of the agriculture committee, loves and supports me in everything I do as I do him. But I don't know what question they asked him. It was probably about, you know, VP this or that or whatever. And he gave them an honest answer, which is like, I'm really busy right now. We're in the middle of our legislative session. I don't know the details of what's going on. Something along those lines.
Okay.
So there's no problems in the home.
Just making sure.
No, I'm glad. I'm glad we cleared it up. I know that when he read that, and that's why he texted me right away. He's just like, I know he. I mean, he's sensitive. He wants to make sure that I know that he loves me and all of that.
Sure, but on the flip side of this, yeah. I think the question came because it is also rumored, like I said at the top of the show, that you might be on the short list for former President Donald John Trump to be his VP.
Is it John?
It is John.
Oh,
yeah.
It is James.
Well, you're not going to get that job now, Tulsi. Jeez. Edit that out, dude. Don't let him see it.
I thought it was Jamal. It'd
be great if it
you
was.
May change it to that, you know.
He should.
He'd really get that black vote.
Get some street cred. Yeah.
Sure would. Is that something you would even consider or have considered? Did you even hear that interview on Fox when they asked him that question? Your name was in there?
I was sitting on the couch at my friend's house in D.C. When that town hall happened. And I had gotten, I think it was my sister or someone else had sent me a clip of it. So that was the first time that I saw or heard such an interaction. Of course I'd consider it. I think, you know, the most important thing for me in my life, whatever position I may be in office, out of office, is doing my best to be able to serve our country. And our country is in a state of existential crisis right now. And both with domestic issues as well as foreign policy, to be in a position where I could actually help support President Trump in executing his policies to secure our border, to bring inflation under control, to improve our economy, to support small businesses, to stop us from continuing down this path that President Biden's taken us on, where we have multiple fires around the world that are pushing us closer and closer to the brink of, you know, war, World War III, nuclear catastrophe. You know, those are things that I would be honored to be in a position to actually help solve these problems and get us back to where we need to be.
Do you think voting for Republicans is the way to solve that? Because I don't think I agree with that, frankly.
I think that, I know that the Democratic Party, President Biden, President Harris, you know, there's a lot of questions. Oh, is there someone going to be switched out? Mm. It doesn't really matter whether it's President Biden or someone else. Because we've seen how the Democrat elite across the board are intent on holding on to power and willing to destroy our country in the process. So, you know, whoever people want to vote for, they can vote for, but understand and know that to be true. And there are so many pieces of evidence that prove that. I'm not saying, you know, there are problems in the Republican Party as well. You know, you look at the Uniparty in Washington, made up of both Democrats and Republicans, are eager to go to war. You look at this whole TikTok bill that was just fast-tracked through the House and is sitting before the Senate. That was a huge majority vote between Democrats and Republicans in the House. And it is a fundamentally anti-freedom bill, something Ron Paul recently said was the most egregious attack on civil liberties and freedom since the Patriot Act on 9/11. So this is not to say, you know, one party evil, one party good. It is a statement of fact that the party in power in the White House is destroying our country and our freedom. And at a minimum, we got to stop the bleeding and begin to start to rebuild by electing the right people in office in both parties.
Yeah, I agree because, you know, Dan and I have talked about this ad nauseum here on this show as far as let's just take the wars are concerned. It seems like both parties are pushing in for this on each side. And this funding for Ukraine and Israel and Hamas. Did you like that flare I put on the end of it? Thank you.
It seemed accurate.
Yeah, it's almost like I'm on the ground over there. But with that, why is the question? Because they all want to line their pockets at the end of the day?
Yes. Yeah. It's that simple, right?
Yeah.
Why even think about it any farther than that? It's which is why, you know, I don't think that the average American's problems get solved in Washington, D.C. I think that's an insane belief. And it also gives entirely too much power to people who weren't meant to have it in the first place,
right? I agree.
We are a federalist system of government.
Yes.
Which is to say the federal government has a very short enumerated set of powers, and then that's it.
Yes.
But that's not how we operate anymore.
No.
Right.
And that's a bipartisan problem.
It is, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, you give somebody power, they're not giving it up. Yep. That's a problem.
Yep.
Unfortunately. Yep. And I don't think voting is going to undo that particular problem. There are too many people, though, that are, they see the logjam or whatever you want to call it, or the uniparty, and become fatalistic or hopeless and think that somehow political violence or something is inevitable. I don't think that's true at all. I think people just being responsible for their own lives probably helps a little bit.
Yeah.
And then saying no to the government, right? There's two very concrete examples of the collective power of no that have happened over the last couple of years. The first is COVID and the restrictions, the lockdowns, the forced vaccination, all that horse shit. People capitulated to it.
Yeah.
And the government ran roughshod over the country and fucked us up, added what, $15 trillion or so probably to the debt, created 40-year high inflation. And then there was a second version called the Governance Disinformation Board under DHS. And everybody was like, fuck that. We're not doing that. And it went away within three
quickly.
Months, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like very quickly.
For DC terms, it went away very quickly.
I think that the Missouri versus Biden court case, which Bobby Kennedy is party to, was another good example of how the checks and balances in our system are supposed to work, where a judge actually had the courage and audacity to say, no, President Biden, you and your people will not coordinate with these big tech companies to decide whose voices are censored and whose are not. And that week that they announced that that court hearing or that ruling, the White House actually had to cancel meetings with Meta and Google that they had planned specifically to determine how they were going to stop quote-unquote disinformation in the 2024 election.
Yeah, and they fired that lady, and now she works for the British government.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's the one covering up for Kate. She's covering up Kate Middleton.
She probably is, yeah.
Where's Kate?
It all goes back to the kingdom.
It sure does. It all
monarchy.
Ends up in the crown, doesn't it? At the end of the day.
We need to throw these people back in the harbor.
Yeah, get our tea back is what we need to do. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, you were down there doing a fundraiser in Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
It
was a fundraiser. This is kind of it was an amusing experience for me. The organization is called the 917 Society. It's a nonprofit started by this this woman who, on her own, understood and saw the problem that our kids going to school are not learning about the Constitution. She's like, I want to do something about this. So she made it her goal, starting with a very small group of schools, to get pocket-sized constitutions in the hands of every eighth grader.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been at this a few years now and has expanded now to last year. They got 1 million constitutions into eighth graders' hands in different states across the country.
Oh, wow.
And this year, their goal is to hit 2 million. So I learned about them a couple of years ago. I wanted to get out to one of their events. I'd not able to make it happen. This year, it happened. And I was and am very proud to support their cause and their mission. The funny thing that I didn't expect was, you know, I said yes to do this event, I don't know, end of last year, early this year. It was held a few weeks ago, and it was at Mar-a-Lago.
Mm-hmm.
And I started getting all kinds of messages from people. There is just an assumption that if you're doing something at Mar-a-Lago, it is with President Trump.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, how do I, you know, can you comp me a seat at this thing? And I was like, well, it's not my event. The seats are $1,500. It's a fundraiser. So no, I can't. Like, well, I want to see you and our president and all that. Anyway, it was just funny. I was like, look, he's not on the program. Maybe he drops by. Maybe he doesn't. The event was held the night of the State of the Union. So he did not drop by. He was in a room next door doing his live truth tweeting. during Truth the Social. Truth Social during the State of the Union. Anyway, it was a phenomenal event, and we had people from all over the country. Some of them were big donors to this nonprofit. Others were people who are in Broward County in Florida, which is not a conservative or Republican county at all. There was a woman who was there with her family. They went and got these constitutions to the hands of every eighth grade public school class in Broward County, which is really awesome. I think this is really important.
But you know what the speculation was? The speculation was Tulsi's going to meet with Trump,
yeah.
and they're discussing VP options, and yeah. then they're going to couch it as this fundraising yeah. events with air quotes, yeah. and that you guys had some secret conversation yeah. about when you guys would announce and all that other stuff.
Yeah, no.
So for the record,
didn't talk to him
at all?
I didn't see him on that trip.
Really?
No.
You just happened to be at his house, essentially, and then
yeah.
you didn't talk to him at all?
No.
I mean, it's a
fair
pretty
enough.
Big
no.
it's a pretty big place.
It's not, according to the judge in New York,
yeah,
it's only 18 million,
yeah,
dude.
Right.
It's only 18 million,
yeah.
so, you know. Yeah. So, all right, so no conversation. You yeah. get out of there. All the headlines the next day
yeah.
Said this exact phrase, Tulsi Gabbard goes full MAGA.
Yeah,
yeah. Which sounds like an action film in,
yeah.
like, the late 80s.
I don't mean, like, what is that? How do you define full MAGA? I think it's probably defined differently by different people, but
ultra,
I
yeah.
was laughing.
There was ultra MAGA for a while,
ultra.
Too.
Headlines, yeah.
Yeah, there's a color system.
I think Marjorie Taylor Greene's outfit during the State of the Union would classify or qualify as full MAGA.
Oh, for sure. She's been on this show.
Yeah, I saw
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's been on here.
Yeah.
Not as crazy as you think in real life, by
no.
the way. Most of these people aren't. So with that, you didn't meet. You didn't discuss politics, presidency, vice presidency,
yeah.
anything else. But now you're lumped in with the MAGA crowd, and it's Tulsi Gabbard's a hardcore Republican.
I mean, it kind of feels like Page Six, doesn't it?
It does.
Right.
Like, none of that shit's ever true.
Here's the cool thing first of all, every event that I've ever gone to that has had Trump supporters, and there were a lot of Trump supporters there in the crowd that night. I think they were probably hoping to be able to meet him as well.
Mm-hmm.
They are people who, in my experience, have been kind and welcoming and people who love our country.
Yeah.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll take this all the way back to, I think it was like the middle of 2022. I got a call from my friend Christy Noem, who said, hey, the organizers of CPAC wanted to invite you to come and deliver a keynote speech at CPAC at their big annual thing in DC. And I was like, that's interesting. Yeah, of course. I'll go and talk to anybody. And when I was backstage about to go out and deliver this speech, it was during their big Reagan dinner, Matt and Mercedes Schlapp, who run that organization, they were like, well, we have no idea how our crowd is going to respond to you. So we are going to physically walk you out, one on each side of me, because we just, like, I don't know. People, I was like, what, are you going to throw, like, Rotten Tomatoes at me or something?
Yeah.
And they're like, maybe. It could happen
with this
crowd, but it was cool because they did walk me out. I got a huge and resounding warm welcome from that crowd. I was still a Democrat at the time. I hadn't yet left the Democratic Party. And I gave a speech about freedom and the thing that I care about most. And after that speech, I stuck around to meet people. And it was very moving, the kinds of response and comments that I got back from them. It was just about how refreshing it was to hear from somebody who probably isn't and hasn't been in the circles that they run in, and to recognize, hey, there are actually a lot of Americans in this country from across the political spectrum who share that same fundamental love of country and who cherish freedom and peace and prosperity. And so that's where, you know, the fact that President Biden has chosen to use the term the MAGA Republicans and the speeches he's given, basically labeling the quote-unquote MAGA Republicans as the biggest threat to our democracy in the country, it's not only, I mean, I know why they're doing it,
mm-hmm.
to foment fear, but nothing could be further from the truth, in my experience, with people that I've met who consider themselves the MAGA Republicans or the ultra-MAGA Trump supporters. They're people who really do love our country and who have taken up this cause because they are so concerned about the attacks on who we are as a country.
Yeah, and by the way, same experience. In 2016, when Trump was running and everything else, they gave us full access to all the campaigns, Republican, Democrat, even the independents.
That's great.
And we had most of them on the show got to meet Trump, his entire family, everything else. The crowds there were just so overwhelming, and it felt like a party and a gathering and a get together. It felt like a really sweet Ren fair, is what it felt. We were just like, okay, cool. Same exact experience with all of these people here. They're not crazy like the media makes them out to be. They do care about the country. And because you care about the country and you don't want, you know, 2 million immigrants coming over the border every single month.
Per year.
Per year. Yeah.
Let's get that.
It feels like monthly.
Yeah.
Feels like monthly at this point.
But they're saying for this year, and I don't have all the numbers at my fingertips, but they're saying for this year, they're anticipating it will be up to 8 or 9 or 10 million people.
We'll see, right? I mean, it's hard to say. The previous years, they've gone somewhere between 2 and 2.8
Yeah.
So far. That's the people we've encountered. We don't know about the getaways.
And I think that's the hard to quantify is how many getaways there
but,
are.
But we estimate something like 25 million total illegals in the country right now, give or take, which is, you know, that's what, 7% of the population here are illegal immigrants. That's weird.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, it feels a lot like Rome and the reason the city eventually failed.
I'm going to the border next week in California. And I have a friend of mine who's a veteran of the Marine Corps who sent me a text last week just saying, hey, there's a huge untold story of what's going on at the California border and that the situation there is far more worse and more extreme than the stories that are being told about what's happening in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the stories that are being told don't include the fact that if you're an unaccompanied woman or female child, you get sent to a stash house for about 2 weeks or so, and then you get gang raped and fed drugs, and then they push you out to some place or another, right?
Right.
That's pretty routine. And I've been talking about this for a couple of years now because I've got buddies that work down there. The U.S. government's been complicit in it. MBM Inc., Southwest Key Programs. There's a lot of NGOs that are getting paid millions and millions of dollars to traffic children around the country right now, right? And I haven't seen one Republican do a goddamn thing to stop it. Not one. I don't even see him talking about it. Like, this is this information is available now, right? These people have been caught doing these middle-of-the-night transports of illegal immigrants all over our country, including unaccompanied children, and not one motherfucker in D.C. has done a goddamn thing about it. Not one. Nobody's even tried to do anything about
it. Well, let me ask you about that. Do you think it goes back to what Trump said back in 2016? Because he got killed for this in the press, where he said there's murders, rapists coming across the border and everything else. Are people afraid to say anything because they're going to be lumped into that same category and how the media is going to paint them? Because that's what I can't figure out either, is the Republicans haven't brought it up either. Democrats, you know why they want to hide California. Obviously, Newsom's running and everything else. And nope, Democratic Party's great, and we got to get Biden in for another 4 years, and then I'll be after him. So we're all good here. No need to say anything at the border of California. But is that it? And then what's the solution for it, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think there are too many Democrats and politicians in general from both parties who are making their decisions driven by fear rather than by recognition that we actually have to do something and take action to solve this. On the Democrat side, you know, they're under the control of this kind of woke cabal, and those who don't fall in line with their woke agenda, they face a lot of the treatment that I got, a lot of the treatment that Bobby Kennedy got, which is just an attempt to cancel you and smear you and completely destroy you, your credibility, and your reputation. There are common sense minded people there, but they are not willing to speak up for fear of their own political career being destroyed. And then I think it's also just a fact that they see this open mass illegal immigration issue as one that potentially works to their favor in their political outlook. You know, we've got the next census coming up in whatever 6 or so years now, and they would like to see some of these states completely and districts redrawn given this new dynamic of having millions of illegal immigrants now in our country.
But do you think they would vote Democrat? Because Dan and I have always said for the last 3 or 4 years, more and more Latino voters are going over to the Republican side. Because they just came from either a regime or some type of gang influence in whatever country they came from.
Well, these people aren't going to be voting. Like, the more direct threat right now is the next time a census happens, right? So a census happens, everyone gets counted whether they're a citizen or not, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get reassigned new or more districts based on that. So California, in the last census in 2020, lost a congressional district because people are fleeing that state rapidly. Now, the opposite can happen, too. And notice, this is okay. why I believe that the government is shipping them all over the country to major cities instead of just leaving them at the border. Because you put them in more major cities, population density goes up, you get an extra congressional district in Philadelphia, for example, yeah. right? Or Boston or
New York is a critical one, too. Yeah. They
so wherever, right?
Democrats lost seats in New York in this last election yeah. as well.
There's a lot in New York. Yeah,
so
right
it's not
now.
It's not just about the voter themselves. It's, a lot of it is just a numbers game, I guess.
And some of yeah. some of there was a congresswoman from New York who said that out loud. She's saying, hey, some people are saying there's quote unquote no room at the inn. She said, come to my district. We welcome you. I need you for redistricting purposes.
Mm-hmm.
She said what a lot of them don't have the courage to say out loud.
Well, she said that's the quiet part about. Out loud.
Yeah,
which is,
exactly.
Which is interesting to hear.
Yep. I think the other issue I think it's important to bring up when we talk about the border is something that we've known has been happening for a very long time, which is you have members of different Islamist terrorist organizations coming across the mm-hmm. border.
Yeah, Hezbollah guy was caught Monday. Wait, yep. today's Tuesday. It was Sunday.
Yeah, with a pipe bomb, and he was heading to New York City.
Yep. yep. Yeah. FBI director, I think last week, talked about how they're concerned about ISIS-connected human trafficking happening.
So well, maybe they should have paid attention to that exactly. instead of Catholic moms.
Exactly. Exactly. You know? And that's you know, points to the serious national security threat that they are creating by allowing this to.
But this is what happens. This is why federalism has worked for so long, because decentralization fixes that particular problem. Yeah. It prevents the centralization and amassing of power in one place. So I don't think the federal government should even exist. I know I'm kind of a radical on that. I think it's pointless. But I want to hear your thoughts on, like, if Vivek Ramaswamy, who's I know you guys are friends, has said some, he's on the Javier Milei side. Mm-hmm. Like, let's start getting rid of the ATF and the FBI and so on. And I agree with him. I think they're fucking dysfunctional organizations. And anybody that has the attitude or the predilection to try to control other people is a problem,
yes.
right? That person has to be rooted out of any kind of position of power.
Yes.
In any way that we can. So I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I think that I agree with the need to get back to what our founders intended in having localized control, essentially localized control, and remembering and going back to the reason for our Constitution was to ensure that it pointed out the limitations of what our federal government should be concerned with. I think that it is necessary and healthy for us as a country to have a lot of these conversations and debates that people in Washington are unwilling to have around things like, for example, the Department of Education. Mm-hmm. What is the purpose of the federal Department of Education? They are dictating things that are impacting people at the local school level. One example that I learned about when I first ran for Congress in 2012 was Hawaii obviously is very connected with and rooted in Native Hawaiian culture. It's a part of everyday life for everyone. Well, there was a woman there who was teaching, you know, in an elementary, public elementary school, she was teaching, you know, kids how to sing Hawaiian songs and Hawaiian music and Hawaiian culture. Well, after some federal legislation passed, she got fired because this auntie who was, you know, probably in her late 50s, who spoke fluent Native Hawaiian, well, she didn't have a master's degree or she didn't have a bachelor's degree. But you can't send a, you know, someone who's 20 years old to go to school and learn the richness of Native Hawaiian culture that she has had from her life. And those little examples that impact specifically local schools in Hawaii, that'll be very different in other parts of the country. The federal government is intervening in and going to a place where they have no business. What to speak of at the broader level, where we have essentially across the country, over half of people are graduating from school functionally illiterate from our education system.
It's called social promotion. So if too many kids from certain areas aren't educationally suited to get promoted to the next grade, they do it socially because they don't want a 16-year-old in fourth grade, basically, yes. even though they read at a third grade level.
Yes.
It's social promotion. It's evil nonsense. It's actually from Bush. It's from the Leave No Child Behind Act is where that came from. Just like generations of incompetence now.
Yeah, because I'm from Georgia, and if somebody taught me how to eat peaches growing up, my teacher did, and they weren't from there, I would tell them, you get the hell out of my state. You get out of here. I know how to
how
eat a
goddamn. How dare you?
Well, that's how you know when people say diversity is our strength, they're full of shit, right? Because anytime anybody tries to actually be diverse in a real way, they shut that shit down. That's what public education is all about. It's about shaping factory workers, right? It's Henry Ford's model and Rockefeller's model. Like, we want compliant workers.
Yes.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
And I agree with you here, because why is that at a federal level when locally, you can't teach these things that go on in people's cultures.
Right. I mean, and just like, you know, you can't go and change education policy as a parent or as a concerned member of the community by going to your local board of education and having them basically say, well, hey, look, these are federal mandates. We can't do anything about them. Mm-hmm. Period. Done.
Well, they can, though, right? The way to do it is to reject federal money, because the federal government only has power if you have your hand out.
Exactly.
Fuck those guys, right?
Exactly.
That's the way to deal with it, right? Is to start getting involved with programs like Tim Kennedy's Apogee program, for example, and teach your own kids and let those assholes mind their own business.
So my parents, they saw this problem a long time ago, and they made the decision. There's five kids. They homeschooled all of us specifically for this reason: is they were not willing to cede our upbringing and you know the instilling of certain values in our education to some random stranger in a school. There was a lot less resources available at that time, and I give them so much credit for making that decision at a time when it wasn't popular. But it's more of that, more of encouraging and providing different kinds of support to parents to be able to make that decision best for what's best for their kids.
So if you did get in there, let's say you were Trump's VP, and he said, hey, I'm going to shut this down. I'm going to shut down DOJ. I want to shut down teachers, you know, the education department, all that other stuff. You would be in support of that. FBI, CIA.
I think that within every one, I can't think of a single federal agency or department or institution right now who is living up to fulfilling its constitutional role. And so I think every federal agency is ripe for challenging whether or not its existence is validated in being able to serve the best interest of our country and meeting the federal government's role in our Constitution. And I think we've got to do that and question everything in every federal agency.
What about, like, we found out last week there's some leaked documents that the CIA had a couple of hundred people at January 6th, right? CIA's mandate is foreign and not domestic.
Correct.
As a matter of fact, they're legally required to operate through a domestic agency to do anything stateside, but yet they were doing it anyways. We also know there were 180, I believe, federal agents in addition to that in the crowd out there. What are your thoughts on all that? Because that seems kind of fucking weird to me, to be honest.
I mean,
the whole thing is weird. But
weird.
The whole thing's weird, but that part in particular is pretty weird.
Yeah. and that's not the only thing. I think there was another report that came out showing that our intel agencies got other foreign countries' intel agencies to spy on President Trump or surveil President Trump or his supporters.
That's not new, though, right?
It's not new. But the point is there are so many different examples of how they have egregiously and increasingly brazenly are using these powers that are supposed to exist for our national security and turning them against Americans. And not just like random samplings of Americans across the country, but specifically fitting within this category of those who are either direct political opponents of the Democrat elite and those in power, or those who are challenging them.
Okay.
Yeah, and a lot of that started with Obama in 2015. Once Trump announced that he was going to run, that Steele dossier bullshit, like that was funded by the DNC.
Yes.
Right. I mean, it's like I don't know that the FBI has ever been weaponized by the presidency to go after a political rival before. I know that Hoover did that on his own quite a bit. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, that's a big reason he started the agency in the first place. He's the GOAT, dude. He's the biggest piece of shit in American history, maybe, right?
Which
he's the GOAT of spying on people, though. You know?
Yeah.
And the building is still named after him.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is crazy.
To that point, that persisted well into Trump's presidency, even.
Right? It did.
So the Obama influence over federal agencies persisted. That again is another thing that's very bizarre to me.
And there are even people who Trump appointed within his own cabinet who allowed this to continue, or frankly just did nothing about it. And this is where I think it's essential. Should he be reelected, that he chooses people to serve in these leadership positions, not only those at the very top, but the thousands of political appointees that he has the responsibility to appoint, be people of courage, mm-hmm. who are not going there and looking for their next political job in order to actually truly execute the cleaning house that needs to occur across all agencies. Because as you know well, it's the middle managers in a lot of these bureaucracies who their whole philosophy is like, hey, we know we're the ones with the power. We know we're the ones that actually make things happen. Voters, they'll pick someone. They'll stay there maybe 4 years, maybe 8 years. We will outlast them all, and we will do everything we can to block the policies we don't like and enact our own mission or vision or whatever. And a lot of this was exposed during Trump's presidency. Mm-hmm. People like, Alan Vindman and others who in congressional testimony said, well, I don't remember the actual quote, but essentially saying that, well, we were trying to protect the country from the president, mm-hmm. and what he was trying to do, which is such an incredibly dangerous mindset when you look at how our system is supposed to work.
But that's what government does, though, right? I mean, it eventually becomes such, and it becomes patrician or aristocratic, and eventually the attitude turns from servicing the community to thinking for them, right? Mm-hmm. Like it becomes a nanny state eventually, and telling people what they can and can't do for their own sake, which is, I can figure it. I mean, I don't have $34 trillion in debt, so I don't want to hear anything from the fucking federal government, frankly, until they can figure that out. I haven't lost multiple wars. I haven't completely fucked my foreign policy for the last 100 years. So maybe you guys do your thing and shut the fuck up, right?
Yeah.
Because anytime anybody who appeals, anybody in this current political generation that appeals to their foreign policy experience, I'm like, all right, cool. Let's look at these box scores right quick.
Mm. Let's check the examples.
Looks like you lost everything.
Yeah.
You fucking incompetent turd, right?
And when Eric was on the show, Eric Trump, last year, I had asked him, I said, what would your father do differently if he were to get reelected? Mm. And he goes, look, I think he was naive in the fact that all these people were going to work with him, mm-hmm. that were under him.
Right.
And this next go round will be a lot different where, and I told him this, I said, look, it felt like everybody was out for a book deal. They were in and out in a couple weeks, tried to get whatever they could, record whatever they could, get out of there, sign a huge book deal, and then make a career in something.
Yeah.
Like an Adam Kingsinger on CNN or something like that, where you're like, all right, I got to parlay this into something. And I think...
Scaramucci, he's one. He's been very outspoken lately.
He walked off the show. Yeah,
I
think I called him a cunt. I don't remember. I mean, I call people cunts.
I'm sure he probably remembers.
Yeah.
He's a little fella. He's a little fiery guy.
He's a tiny man, but he wasn't thrilled. His was over the vaccine is what he walked out.
Oh, yeah, he said we were agents of China because we weren't forcing our employees to get vaccinated. I'm like, all right, really? Cool.
Yeah, we just said, look, I don't even think you guys are technically employees. I just pay you under the table in cash, and that's kind of it. So
I thought they were slaves.
Yeah, for
like
a long
Keebler
time.
Elves or some
you
shit.
Did, yeah.
Like I'm pretty sure the Keebler elf thing is a whole slave ring.
Same.
It feels like it, doesn't
but
it?
But if you dress them up cute, it doesn't really feel like
and
slavery.
And they're happy, so
keep
they're on drugs.
Food.
Yeah, just keep them.
Sugar.
No. If you're eating cookies
sugar
all day,
them up.
Are you really working a day in your life? You got to ask yourself that. But it was interesting to hear him say that, and I think he's right. Yeah. I think he will learn from the experience of going back in there. I think, you have the 4 years off. You're able to study some game tape and then try to figure it out. As far as immigration is concerned, this is what I have personally said on this show, and I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. I think you should shut down the border for 10 years. Just get a count of everybody who's here, who shouldn't be here, get them out. Obviously, you want some people to stay and do some of the jobs that, you know, the white men won't do, or, yeah, or whatever the media is going to, you know, call it. I think a 10-year ban of just immigration as a whole till we get a count of our country would help not only financially, but it would help with the budgets and everything else. And then we could actually figure out who's here and then how to help these people if they're going to stay, and then who to get out. Like you mentioned earlier, I think it was, what, 378 that were on the terrorist watch list that, yeah, we know that are here.
Those are the only ones. Those are only the ones we know about.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's get a count. Let's get a head count of everybody. Figure it out. Do another census.
Well, luckily now a federal judge said that it's okay for them to purchase and own firearms, even if they're illegally here.
Right.
Which is kind of, that's interesting. They don't believe that for us.
No, but for them it's fun.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
What are your thoughts on that? Would that solve anything?
I'll disagree, probably meet you halfway. I think that all of the efforts and energy, and I hope that, well, I know based on what he has said that if President Trump is reelected, this is the priority, to shut down the border and actually put the resources to securing it, mm-hmm, and working with the states and the governors, obviously, as the Biden administration has not, in actually executing that, using all the tools and technology that we have available, and going through and looking at the people who've come across the border over the last 3+ years under the Biden-Harris administration's open border policy, find them and get them out, and send a strong message. Anyone enters our country illegally or tries to enter our country illegally, you'll be immediately deported and you will not be allowed back in this country, period, full stop. I don't think we should go so far as shutting down all immigration, legal immigration included, because I think it ends up hurting us. And I got a call from a friend of mine who is about to retire, as you know, he's done over 30 years as a Green Beret. He wants to invite his wife is from Europe. Mm-hmm. He wants to invite his wife's family to come to their retirement. It's kind of a big moment in their lives. On a tourist visa, they have jobs and kids in school and all kinds of things, and they are being told they have been rejected. Mm-hmm. They are not allowed to come to America for 2 weeks to come to this significant milestone in this man's life, who's given his life and service to our country, because some bureaucrat was like, yeah, no, I don't think so.
Well, we can fix that for you.
Yeah. Sneak him in. Eagle Pass is open.
No, I can just make some phone calls. That's easy enough to get that fixed.
Eagle Pass is open, too. I got a buddy down. I'm really good at lifting up barbed wire. You can't see any scratches, can you?
No.
Yeah, not one.
You know,
that's how good I am.
One of the other things about this election that people aren't thinking about right now and is the composition of the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. Because it hasn't really been made public yet, but behind the scenes, the DNC is trying to get Sotomayor to retire right now. Mm-hmm. They're really pressuring her to retire so Biden can put in a new
younger
person, yep, right, to take that spot, because they're really worried about Trump doing exactly what he did last time, which is put 3 justices on, right? Now, Clarence
How
Thomas.
How old is she, do you know?
69. Clarence Thomas is probably on his way out soon.
A Supreme Court justice, it seems like.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
it's young for anybody in politics.
That's kind of fucked up. I mean, there's 3 in their 50s now, 4 in their 50s, right? Mm-hmm. Ketanji Brown Jackson's in their 50s. The party guy, what's his name? Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
The beer guy.
Automatic. Still is, dude.
The white blonde lady. What's her name?
Amy Coney Barrett.
Coney Barrett. And then who's the other one? There's one other that's still in their 50s. I don't remember who it is. But even like...
Gorsuch.
Maybe it is Gorsuch, but the rest are older.
60s
like Clarence
and
70s. Thomas is in his 70s, right? Yeah. She's 69 now. Mm-hmm. I think the composition is going to change pretty soon. And that's, to me, is something I don't quite understand right now. Like the fact that they stayed with Biden as the nominee because there's no, like, he's incompetent. I'm not that conspiratorial, generally speaking, but I do think Obama has more influence in the White House than Biden does right now.
Obama
and Hillary both.
I think he's president.
But the fact that they're trotting him out there still as the candidate is very bizarre to me, mm-hmm, considering it could be a 7-2 court pretty soon.
Yeah.
Like within the next 2 years, it could be a 7-2 court on the conservative side. Not that they always do things that are particularly conservative necessarily, but you would think they'd be fighting harder in that particular area, to be honest, because they did last time. That was a big... That was a big political point they made.
Huge. It was, yeah. it was the top of the list.
In 2016, right?
Yeah. It's like, exactly.
This guy's a racist. Also, he's going to fuck up the court.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you don't hear anything about it.
From the Democrat standpoint, for the longest time, they believed that Biden would be the only guy who could beat Trump.
Mm.
Whatever metrics they were looking at, but also like, hey, he did, did it last time.
Whatever, right?
Right. He was Uncle Joe, you know? Mm. He was the guy who got along with everybody and, you know, was supposed to be the more, centrist, middle America,
moderate.
And his administration has turned out to be the most radical and extreme progressive, so-called progressive, whatever that word means to a lot of people, administration ever
in
history. I think part of it for a while has been that, just like, hey, he did it before, he can do it again. But now as we're seeing it break in the media and amongst some influential Democrats who are being very open and saying like, hey, this guy's not all there, he shouldn't be the guy. Mm. Joe Biden is also very stubborn. And, you know, it makes sense that he would believe that he's the guy and not go willingly. This is something he's wanted his entire life.
Yeah.
I don't see how he, I've known him for years. I don't see how he just says, okay, I'm going to walk away and let someone else do this.
Yeah, and I've changed my stance on that. So I was wrong last year, and I told the audience, because I thought for sure he would step down over the holidays and say, all right, enough is enough. Newsom was out.
There were a lot of signs in the public sphere, I think, people encouraging that outcome.
Newsom was taking trips to China.
CNN was talking about potential replacements.
Oh, but it was always Newsom. And Newsom was out doing press with everything.
Yeah.
And any interview he could get, he was there. So I was like, all right, they're going to slide this guy in. And then he didn't over the holidays, came back and apologized to the audience and said, well, I got this one wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But everything that I've heard from the inside was the same thing that you just said, that he's so stubborn that he's wanted this his entire life. And if he dies in office, who gives a shit? That's what he's always wanted to do. So why not just die on stage, I guess?
Yeah.
Maybe like a Mick Jagger will someday or something. Yeah. Who knows?
And when you think about it, there are a lot of people, because he's clearly not running the show. There are a lot of people behind the curtains who are benefiting greatly from having someone like him in that position where they can very easily be like, hey, here's your note cards.
Mm-hmm.
There's the cameras. Here's what's going on. And here are the decisions that are being made. And you look at, you talked about President Obama, who has said publicly, like, hey, I forget what questions, like, do you miss it or whatever? He's like, my ideal day would be me staying at home in my pajamas and running the country from my living room, or whatever it was he said, something along those lines.
Yeah.
And then you've got Hillary Clinton saying, she's like, yeah, I talk to the White House every day. And you've got Hillary Clinton's guy, Jake Sullivan, running foreign policy for President Biden. And you have President Obama's person, Susan Rice, running domestic policy under President Biden. And so it's not, yes, there are many forces, who will remain unnamed, but on a day-to-day practical basis of how decisions are being made and who's in the room, it's not at all a stretch to know that it's predominantly President Biden, Hillary Clinton, by proxy or directly, who are calling the shots.
Yeah.
You mean President Obama.
President Obama, yeah.
What did I
say?
You
said Biden.
Oh, yeah.
Biden,
I meant President Obama.
They look exactly alike.
I meant President Obama.
Yeah. They pretty much look alike.
That was a mistake, Tulsi. You should not have made that mistake live on air. Sorry about that.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
This is what, like, people, when they think of the deep state.
That was good.
People, when they think of the deep state, often think of, like, I don't know, a group of, like, a cigar smoke-filled room.
Exactly.
A cabal somewhere. It's like, no, it's just assholes on the phone, man. It's
not an envelope slid across the table at a Parisian
cafe. It's
puppets
in office with handlers like Ron Klain, for example, who's been handling Biden for, 20 years, something like that. It's the unelected bureaucrats are a big problem, because they keep pushing this stuff that I don't think anybody really wants. Certainly people don't want this immigration. I don't really get to talk to a lot of so-called progressives, because they won't, right? Because I call them assholes all the time, but... I would be really curious to see what they had to say about immigration. I know what the progressive leaders are saying now. It's like, hey, our cities are fucked.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, and we told you.
Well, I think this election is going to come down to two issues, immigration and abortion.
I think economy and inflation remains near the top of that list.
You hope so, right?
Yeah.
But that used to be the top every year.
It used to be every year, but then it wasn't. Because if you look at your receipts and your grocery bills and all that stuff... a normal person would say, yeah. This is crazy.
It is crazy.
Why am I paying $25 for a Five Guys yeah. cheeseburger
it's
here?
Serious.
This is nuts.
Yep.
But I don't hear that from the left. Instead, I hear abortion, abortion, abortion. Yeah. And I don't think the Republicans did themselves any favors by having that dummy from Alabama come up and give an acting speech on her first day of class. Like, more classes would have been helpful. Just as a former director, I'm saying this. But mm-hmm. I heard Mitch McConnell made that switch at the last second over Vivek.
Is that right?
Yeah, well, that's the rumor.
That's the word
and the word on the street. And I know some people on the street, Tulsi. but I think he would have been the best one to do that. Now, that puts that abortion thing front and center right after the State of the Union. Not great yeah. for Republicans. All the
that,
ads.
That was a huge mistake.
All the ads that are coming in right now. Are abortion, 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 yeah. save your states, save your states.
When they should be this. They should this should be the ad right here. I'm looking at a chart right now. And you'll hear every Democratic Party messaging center, whatever it happens to be, whether it's a PAC or the media itself or a politician's campaign, are talking about how good the economy is doing right
yes.
now. And it's doing great if you're wealthy.
Yes,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like yeah, if you're rich.
If your interest is in the S&P, you're doing fine, right? But if it's in putting food on your fucking table, not so much. So here's some... This is from February 2020 until today. Baby wipes are up 55%.
Yeah, I got three right? kids. I can confirm that.
Bleach is up 75%. That's weird.
I thought about drinking it every weekend. That's true.
Cow milk is up about 20%. Deodorant, 60%. Dog food, 60%. Eggs, 60%. Nutrition bars, 80%.
Yep. Mm. The chalupas are up 300%.
Yeah, paper towels are up 40%. Potatoes are up 70%. Ramen noodles are up 75%. Mm. Right, the stuff that poor people buy, for example. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So these people, the leftists, don't give a fuck about the poor. They hate the rich. That's all it is. It's all it's ever been. It's like a weird pathology where I don't know if it's like.
And yet, so many of them. Qualify as being quote unquote rich.
Yeah, it's so weird, right?
And that's where, yeah, I mean, none of them are talking about this. And I think that they're using the same tactic with the economy as they are with the border in just pushing out like, hey, the economy's great and hoping people just believe it if they say it enough. Oh, the border is secure. Hoping that people will believe it. But this is where I think this is where I hope, and I don't have data to back it up, but this is where I hope just, and I would add this whole thing with, Title IX and people's daughters having to compete against boys in sports and all this other stuff, that these things that impact the everyday lives of the vast majority of Americans across the country that transcend the quote-unquote politics or traditional differences of Democrats versus Republicans on different issues, these are undeniable facts that people are living every day. So it doesn't matter how many times they're told, hey, the economy's great. If they're seeing their paycheck go, not nearly as far as it used to be because of this radical increase in inflation, I just hope that people pay attention to that.
You would think the mind has to rebel at some point
yes.
to being
yeah.
fed bullshit.
And
for
I think
that
COVID,
long,
the
think.
Whole COVID thing, I think helped instigate that. In people recognizing that, hey, 1 + 1, what they're telling us does not actually make sense here.
I hope so, but I said this earlier on Ross Patterson Revolution this morning, but I hope so. The problem is they're doing things right now that are so blatantly obvious lies in front of our
yes.
face on a daily basis. We'll take these Trump trials that are going on right now. I talked about it earlier with Mar-a-Lago. Great. You have a judge that says, you know what? I moonlight as a realtor for Zillow, and that's $18 million. Now you're going to pay $454 million, yeah. or we're going to shut down all your properties. It's currently going on. Nobody can stop it right now. Then you have the thing in Georgia.
Yeah.
Fannie Willis. Great. She comes on. She's got her lover. Clearly paid $700,000. He's saying she only got a few hundred bucks back in cash and vice versa. You know what? You get to stay on the case. Just fire your ex-lover.
Yeah.
I mean, it's happening every single day in front of our face that I don't think they care anymore.
Now, when people operate openly with impunity like that, it's because they believe they are entitled to, right?
Yes.
It's like, this is why you should never give the government power over anything. I hate this. There's too many. Every fucking bill now is called the bipartisan something, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, Republicans and Democrats are working together. When Republicans and Democrats work together, America suffers because of it. Because these people are the worst people in the fucking world that think that they have the right to hold other people's liberties in their hands and dole it out as they see fit, right? Now, eventually we're going to have to get to this part of the conversation, I think, about your stance on the Second Amendment and how it's evolved over time. I've got some sure. thoughts on it, but I want to, just for the audience, give us the elevator pitch. Right, because it's yeah. our audience cares about this stuff.
Yeah,
so
of
I just
course.
Want to give you the
80% of our audience is military and first responder. Yeah. They're also fans of yours, even when you were a Democrat. Said, you know what? Wish you would come over to the other
side.
Well,
first they were fans of Moana.
Moana.
And then, like, you're swimming in her wake, to be honest.
Yeah, and then you came on board. But where you lost some of them was on some of your particular stances on 2A.
Yeah.
Where do you stand now on that, going back to what Dan said?
I support the Second Amendment. You know, my experience over the last several years in particular gave me a much deeper and greater appreciation for our founders' intent for the Second Amendment.
What do you mean, your experience? Like in government?
I mean, well, just you know, first of all, I grew up in Hawaii, which is, I think it has the most restrictive gun laws in the country. The state legislature is currently trying to push even more restrictive gun laws during this legislative session as we speak. And so my exposure to guns growing up was, I mean, you know, my dad went and we shot a pistol a few times, probably. And that was pretty much it. Mm-hmm. First time I ever touched a rifle was when I joined the military in basic training. Even in that atmosphere and environment, it was, you know, it was like, okay, you're going to go sign your rifle out of the armory. Every single round that you have is accounted for. It is in and of itself a pretty restrictive environment. And even at best in the military, a lot of them only shoot a couple times a year, if that. And so in concept, I had always supported the Second Amendment. But when talking with different folks, I did not fully understand when people are saying, well, these are common sense gun safety laws. And well, maybe this, if you do this thing, it will help to prevent the next mass shooting in a school. And I think there are a lot of Americans who felt as I did, well, you know, if there's a way to strike that right balance where you're able to maintain people's rights to defend themselves and also try to prevent a mass killing, then shouldn't we try to do that? The argument that was made that I had heard people make about our founders intending the Second Amendment not only to be a right to defend yourself and your loved ones for recreational purposes or whatever, but to serve as a check on the power of a tyrannical government, in my mind it was like, okay, that I can't imagine that scenario in my life, and it didn't seem real. And that's where over the last several years, we, in my experience at least, we have seen such a transformation where that has become a very real situation where the abuse of power is becoming so brazen. I got to spend a lot of time with folks during my 2020 campaign and since who shared their experiences with me, people who've grown up around guns and understanding, well, what is this quote unquote gun culture like and what are the maybe intended consequences for some. I know a lot of Democrats who want to get rid of guns completely, get rid of the Second Amendment. For some, they're unintended consequences, you know, of some of these things that are sold as common sense gun safety laws and how they do directly infringe on our Second Amendment rights and how they are essentially these stepping stones toward their ultimate goal and objective, which is getting rid of guns and disarming the populace. And so my views on, you know, things like the assault weapons ban have changed out of that learning, understanding, and that growth in really appreciating our founders' full intent for the Second Amendment and what that means to actually be committed to supporting and defending it.
I think Ben Franklin said anyone that sacrifices liberty for security deserves neither. Right?
Yes.
I've had this conversation with a lot of people about not just you, but a lot of people have made this, I guess, road to Damascus transformation over the last couple of years. It's easy to say it now that you're not voting on it, right? But your voting record tells a different story. Now I know people can change, things change like that. I guess from my perspective, it's less about guns specifically for me. It's more about the relationships some people have with the Constitution itself, this predilection to think for other people, right? This, the idea that, that anybody has the right to tell somebody else what to do, how to defend themselves, so on and so forth, is much deeper than just the gun issue, right? Because it manifests itself in quite a few ways. Yeah. Like we talk about the Bill of Rights. I doubt many people could even list them, frankly, that talk about them on a regular basis. Like, I don't want troops quartered in my home, but I don't think that's going to be a problem either. But search and seizure is something that I should be worried about, right? So let's take this to a practical level. You're in office somewhere with a voting power to do so. How would you react to, let's say, the ATF or the NFA, the National Firearms Act, that restricts all sorts of gun ownership, and the fact that the ATF has created a $2 billion entry-long gun registry, which is against federal law, things like that? How would you handle those things specifically?
I think those are two of the many examples where government abuse of power and government overreach has become rampant. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on all of these issues, but I think it calls into question whether or not those two should exist.
Well, they shouldn't, right? Like, why? Let's say, let me think of a good metaphor here. Let's say you're in a village and there's bears surrounding the village, and I give you a tool to use to defend yourself against the bears, but I give the bears a vote in how that tool gets used, right? That's not how that's supposed to go.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really difficult for me to buy the because it's now very politically expedient for people to jump on board with a lot of this conservative stuff that people have fought for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah. No, I think your and others' skepticism is warranted. It's warranted. I think also, if we are to hope to bring about change to our government, to our laws that are currently infringing on our freedoms, there has to be room for people like me to change, to actually learn. You know, if we are, and it's not only this issue, but there are many others. If we close ourselves off to saying, well, you know, in my case, well, this was a bill that you co-sponsored. This was a vote that you took. I will tell you, no, I would not do that today. I'm not in a position of elected office, so I can't show you that. And I don't expect you to just be like, okay, cool, got it. I get it. Trust is earned. Absolutely. But if there is not an openness to having this kind of dialogue, and frankly, to helping, and I wish people in Congress would go and hang out with a lot of my friends, a lot of people who I've heard from and I've learned from, to be able to gain that understanding.
Mike and Tim and people like that.
Yeah, of course. And gain that kind of understanding that they clearly don't have, and to challenge their assumptions or the things that they thought to be true. We should be encouraging those kinds of things. If we don't, and it's just like, hey, you are a Democrat, so you're like, you're not a part of, you're not welcome. Then where do we go? How do we grow? How do we actually start to fix things? I think there's no ability to do that.
That's stupid.
I agree. And you do have to allow people to change, because that's what we ultimately want for everyone. You know.
Well, otherwise, why are you in the argument?
Right. If you're not willing to hear somebody else.
Now, fuck hearing them. Like, if your goal isn't to change their mind, you don't actually believe what you're saying.
If you're just yelling and making your argument because you want to hear yourself make it. That's really what, and unfortunately, that's what a lot of our so-called debate is about, is people are more interested in hearing themselves rather than actually seeking to influence and inform and actually have a true, meaningful engagement that, frankly, both people benefit from. I know that I have over these years.
What are your thoughts on red flag laws? Because a lot of people have, I mean, it's an interesting question, because if I were to tell you, I have this data, and if I give it to you, then you can prevent something from happening, right? Like, yeah, that's a fact. Just to say, for the sake of argument, that was a fact. What responsibility do you now have to put that into power? Like, my position is that the government should never have a say in that, right? Because they're the thing we're defending against, frankly, right? But
I'll be very honest with you and your viewers. I have a lot of concerns about the red flag laws, and also this is an area that I want to learn more about. You know, because I've seen and heard the stories about, oh gosh, I forget what state it was in, but there was someone that was a friend of a friend who basically had a disagreement with his wife. Mm-hmm. She left the house, called the cops, and said, hey, my husband has a bunch of guns, and I don't feel safe, or he's having a mental health breakdown. Mm-hmm. Cops came in, got all the guns, took them away, and I don't remember if they arrested him. I think they may have. But basically, they kept his guns. And even after he proved, like, hey, I'm not a risk to my wife or my family or myself or others, he had to file a lawsuit to mm-hmm. get his guns back. And I believe he may have taken this up. I don't know if the Supreme Court. Does this sound familiar?
I know the case.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it's made it to the Supreme Court
okay.
yet. But
I think he was pursuing trying to continue to challenge that. So anyway, that's the risk. One example of the risks that I see.
I mean,
with
that's
the red
a false.
Flag laws.
That's a false positive in bureaucracy. Which is a risk. Which is definitely a risk. And that, like, incompetence is always a risk with government, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just go to the fucking DMV.
Yeah.
The real risk is what we've seen over the past, let's call it 8 years, which is the weaponization of the federal government against
yes.
ordinary people,
yes.
right? So every rule they make, just imagine it being leveraged against you.
Correct.
Right? I mean, that's exactly what the fuck's going to happen. And now we're also dealing with this TikTok bullshit. It looks like the Saudi government's trying to buy it now, which is great for everybody.
Correct.
Like, we should definitely trust the people that did
9/11. Trying to buy the PGA and then the WTA, which is the Tennis Association as well, and combine that. But I'll go back to what you said regarding 2020 here. Was January 6th a part of this change in stance on guns? Because it was the first time in the show that the government could actually make something happen.
Like
look
into your banking records and see if you were in a city and then just go arrest you.
Yeah.
Correct.
Like,
yeah.
All right.
Because before
this, I guess.
Before the January 6th thing, I was like, our government would never do that. Mm-hmm. You know, me personally, Dan's got one right next to his desk, obviously, an AR-15, but me personally, never thought about buying one. Got a couple handguns, feel safe and secure with those if anything were to happen around my house. That was the first time where I was like, oh, shit, man. Our government's capable of more than we even know.
Yes.
Did that have something to do with your change in stance?
Yeah, I would say it started before then, but that certainly showed a serious escalation of force, actual force, by our federal government against political opponents. And it has increased from there. You know, the push by Elizabeth Warren to force credit card companies to flag purchases of ammunition mm-hmm. from wherever, Dick's Sporting Goods or wherever you go, and flagged as a quote unquote way to protect us from suspicious activity. You know, the stuff we saw happening in Canada with the truckers, the stuff that we saw happening with the IRS under the Obama administration, targeting groups specifically who had Patriot nonprofits that had Patriot
like
in
Mike
their,
Glover's
in their title.
Fieldcraft Survival is technically a terrorist organization.
Yeah.
They teach people how to make rabbit traps and purify water in the fucking wild.
You ever been punched in the face by a rabbit?
No.
It hurts.
You have?
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
How Easter. Does that work? I mean, the kangaroo thing, I get. Those kangaroos
Easter
get
Sunday.
Real boxy.
Easter
you just
got
to keep your distance on the kangaroo, though. He's got short arms, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can.
They're muscular, though.
Yeah.
They're jealous.
See, the real threat from a kangaroo is they'll prop up on their tail and they'll kick you with their back. They'll kick the shit out of you with their back legs. That's where you got to watch out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for me, that's kind of where this all started.
Yeah.
And then, you know, moving forward, let's say you are the VP. Do you think we will get an honest and fair election this fall?
I don't know.
Do you think the last one was?
If there's any doubt, there is no doubt. Right? Robert De Niro said that one time.
Did
but he?
He
was right, yeah. It was in Ronin, I believe, was the movie. But
That's a profound statement.
He's right. If there's any
it
doubt, there is no
statement.
Doubt. Like, if there isn't, it's the same thing with our epistemology. If there isn't, like, an absolute set of facts that we all agree on, then it's not, we're all fucking playing games here.
Yeah.
It's all nonsense, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting a Ronin reference today, so I'm
it's a good movie.
By that.
It is.
John, whatever the fuck his name is, that French dude, great actor. Sean Bean's in that movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a great movie.
All those guys. I haven't seen it in years.
Me too.
Well, it's from 92, which was like...
I wasn't even born yet. No, 34 years old, tender babe in the woods. Still am. But you don't think 2020 was a real election?
Well, no. I mean, it was an election, but I think that a lot of people are focusing on the wrong things when they're talking about it being a quote unquote rigged election. Because you got to look at the influence operations. You got to look at...
That's what he said.
Yeah, I said that for you. That's what he said. Like, you don't have to hack a machine, but you can hack somebody's fucking brain.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And you look at how the parties were trying to tilt the scales. You look at the freaking ongoing coup that started against President Trump from the time that he was running in 2016. We're talking about the quote-unquote deep state and what that looks like. That continued on throughout almost his entire presidency in 2016 and is still going on. And this whole Russia collusion thing was really at the heart of it.
Maybe somebody knows this, but has it ever happened before that a previous administration just continued to control the office after the old administration was out? I'm sure it's happened in some places.
But not to this level. Yeah. Because there's never been... Because
it was the entire intelligence community.
It was.
Like, every retired IC guy who was a fucking, out of GS, right? Like, above GS level, was writing letters like, oh, this is real. Like, no, it's not. And then they came back a couple years later with the Hunter Biden laptop, like, oh, it's fake. Like, no, it's not.
Right.
Like, how wrong do you need to be?
Even though they knew.
Yeah.
They knew when they wrote that letter, when those 51 guys knew that when they wrote that letter that it was false. But that's my point, is that... it's important that people know the truth about what is really going on, because it will continue. And we're seeing it happening right now with all of the different ways they've been trying to get President Trump off the ballot. I know that we will continue to see more of these kinds of effort. And this is where I tell people, as flawed and as problematic as this system is, the only way we get to a place where we can start to fix it is to engage in the process, is to actually vote and make informed votes. Don't just follow blindly party line the Democrats. One of their things that I always found just offensive was they would go up on stage over and over again saying, vote blue no matter who. Mm-hmm. Like, what? Vote blue no matter who.
I'm sure Republicans would have said it if they could have thought of anything clever, right?
Well, I was asked a couple of weeks ago by an influential Republican in New York City at a dinner. She's like, are you going to stand with the Republicans? I said, well, which Republicans are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I told her,
I'm not going to stand
with Liz Cheney.
Right.
I'm not going to stand with Nikki Haley.
What about that weirdo from New York?
George Santos.
Santos.
Yeah, he popped back in, by the way. State of the Union.
He said he's going to run again.
Sure did.
He should run for president.
Into the back row. He was all sassed up. Hello. He was ready to rock there.
In his Instagram bio, or maybe it's his, I don't know, OnlyFans account where he says he's an iconic former member of Congress.
Yeah, he's a little Maxinista is what he is. Yeah. He's a TJ Maxx guy.
Something.
Likes to get all classed up over there.
Is that what they call it, Maxinista?
They do on the streets. Again, I've got people.
That classy joint, TJ
Maxx. Yeah, whatever.
I love TJ Maxx. It's about being fiscally responsible.
You don't have a choice but to shop there now. Right? You can't afford anything else.
Exactly.
And most of these major cities, they're shutting down everything else. Yeah, so that's the only thing that's left.
True. There's Ross's
Lock
too,
and
right?
Key.
Yeah.
Ross's too.
Not as no... No bearing, obviously. Yeah. Now, with your book, For Love of Country, that's coming out April 30th, you can pre-order that now on Amazon. What's something fun and flirty in the book that nobody knows about Tulsi Gabbard?
Fun and flirty. I don't know about the flirty part, but the fun part...
Well, wait, I learned your husband's name was Abraham today. He was here, and I said, after Lincoln, you guys went biblical.
Yeah, he's out there parting the Red Seas right with Moses.
I know.
Which one was Abraham? He's out there making tribes.
We'll start with the traffic.
Yeah.
I get into some pretty personal parts of my life that I haven't shared and don't really share publicly in the political realm because they are personal, but I get into the central role that God plays in my life and my own spiritual journey and relationship with God, and get into some of the experiences that I had while I was running for president that that were so eye-opening, and kind of frankly revealed my naivete when I first started to run for president, and expose the toxic underbelly of our American politics and how deeply entrenched the corruption and the rot in Washington is, in both parties. And it is the uniparty that always tries to take away our freedom in the name of them, so that they can get more power, and very often done, as we're seeing with the TikTok bill, in the name of national security, which goes back to the Ben Franklin quote that you talked about.
Yeah, it's always the road to hell is paved with good intentions,
yes,
right?
It's true. It's true.
Don't believe anybody that's coming to sell you a miracle cure. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It's just
and
social
demand
snake
truth.
Oil now.
I think this is what we need more of from our political leaders at every level. Is tell me the truth, even if you know it's going to piss me off. And politicians very rarely do that, unless it's about the other guy.
Right. But let's take a guy like Dan Crenshaw, for example.
Yeah.
You guys share a lot of the same friends, military, everything else.
We were friends when he got to Congress. So I got to know him a little bit.
Do you follow his stock advice?
No.
You well, you'd be top five.
He's beating the S&P by 25%, so you should.
You know, I haven't talked to him for a while, and he hasn't reached out to me, but I think that he has decided to take on the banner of Ukraine and this proxy war with Russia, and is pretty livid at those who say we shouldn't. And I'm one of those people.
Yeah, same, because it's in the border bill.
Yeah.
And that's right. Everybody's saying, oh, why can't you have the border?
I'm sorry, the bipartisan border bill, stupid bitch.
Exactly. That's my fault.
You stupid bitch.
That's my fault. I'll wear that like Santos today, okay?
Speaking of that, what are your thoughts on Russia, like an off-ramp to the situation? Because we had one before it ever started, mm-hmm. right?
Had one.
An off-ramp. Like, we could have shut that shit down before it ever started.
Yeah.
Then we had another ceasefire that was agreed to, and Boris Johnson showed up and fucked that up. Mm-hmm. So who's going to step in and fuck this next one up? Like, because they're definitely, Ukraine is fucked, right? They can't fight this war. So,
well, they can't win it.
Well, fair enough, yeah. But, like, if you fight long enough without winning, you lose.
Sure.
So, what are your thoughts on how this is going to play out, to be honest? Like, I don't know. It definitely depends on who gets elected in this next election.
Yes. I don't know who the intermediary or the neutral broker will be, but that is the only way that this happens. And as you pointed out, Turkey attempted, other countries have attempted to serve as that intermediary for discussions that at different times both countries were actively engaging in. But it was the United States and others in the West who have stood in the way of that. That's the only way. That is the only way that this ends. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it'll continue to be a war of attrition, and more innocent people will die. I'm very concerned about Macron and his increasingly escalatory statements.
He's like Tony Blair.
He's
like Tony Blair during Iraq now.
Yes.
That's what he is. He's like the one dickhole in Europe that's just like, yeah, let's fucking do this.
Right.
Like, all right, we'll send some troops there, bud.
Right.
Yeah. Or you
France?
Go. Yeah.
Well, that's
what the
problem.
Fuck is
like,
France
no,
going to do?
Don't send your troops there, because if he sends his troops there, then, you know, it'll be hours before Article 5 in NATO is invoked, and then it turns into World War III.
Yeah, or a bloodbath.
Yeah, bloodbath is another hashtag. One. That's a hashtag bloodbath.
I was trending. I saw that trending yesterday.
It was. And then last but not least, this morning there was an op-ed piece about you where they said, I think Tulsi would be a great Secretary of State.
Interesting.
Is that a job that you would consider?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
It would be good, because we have the most incompetent group of cabinet secretaries right now that we ever have had ever. Yeah. Mayorkas is the worst that I've ever seen anybody be at a job. Buttigieg took 4 months of paternity leave while we had international shipping crises. It's like somewhere's got to be good at something.
Well,
right?
Yes. I mean, and you can look at, okay, well, there are different people who have different resumes and qualifications or whatever the case
may
be.
The mayor of South Bend. That shouldn't even be on your resume.
No.
Come on, man.
His and it was interesting, because we were both running for president at the same time in 2020. His city in South Bend was the same population as my district when I was on the city council in Honolulu, which I thought was fascinating. And someone during that time did a side by side comparison of headlines around the headlines when I announced my candidacy as a veteran. He is a veteran, served I think in the Navy. Pete Buttigieg announces his candidacy, and they did a side-by-side of all the collection of the headlines, and it was like negative, 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 maybe one slightly positive, and then it was just like puff pieces across the board, which again points to the reality, which is the parties, the mainstream media, and big tech pick and choose who we as voters should know about, what we should know about them, and whether or not they are deemed credible or not. And if you're not part of that cabal, then it's you know, it's guns a-blazing against you. But again, I'm just going to reiterate this because it is critical. Whether it's as Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, these positions, you know, the Director of National Intelligence, the head of the CIA, all of these positions need to be filled with people, yes, who are competent, and also just as importantly, maybe even more importantly, have courage. Have courage, because you're not only taking on the wrath of you know, it will be the wrath of members of Congress, it will be the wrath of the media, it will be the wrath of the permanent Washington elite, but it's also the wrath of all those middle managers who will be threatened by having someone in a position of leadership to actually turn every one of those agencies and institutions inside out.
Yeah. No, I agree. Now's the point in the show we get to something called the Drinking Bro of the Week, which is someone who has inspired you or helps you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the Drinking Bro of the Week to?
I worked for a time for Senator Akaka from Hawaii.
He was a World War II veteran.
He was a World War II veteran.
And did he fight in Korea as well, or was it just World War II?
It was just World War II. He was a school teacher all the way up till the time that he ran for Congress. And he was a true statesman. What I learned from him was, and we started the conversation with aloha, so I'll close with aloha. He was somebody who really embodied what aloha means, which it's used as a greeting, you know, hello and goodbye. Mm-hmm. But the reason why it's used for a greeting is because of the deep meaning behind it, which is based on a recognition that we're all children of God and that we should treat each other with respect because of that. And by starting a conversation with aloha, you get past all of these other barriers that too often get in the way of having a meaningful engagement. He is somebody who inspired me because of that spiritual groundedness. And early on in my politics, not about one issue or another issue, but just how to walk through life and do your best to live in that way.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, look, can't wait for the book to come out. It is Tulsi Gabbard, For Love of Country. It is available now on Amazon for pre-order. All those pre-orders counts for the first week in the New York Times bestseller list. But let's face it, you're a Republican now. You're not getting on there.
I'm an independent.
Okay. Hey. All I've read is you're full MAGA. That's what I thought the book was going to be called. Yeah. Full MAGA, Tulsi Gabbard, shotguns.
There you go.
Full MEGA is actually a first form product.
Is it really?
I think it's like a heart pill of some sort. Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, get it. Protect yourself.
Pretty close.
They should change it. I know Andy likes Trump, so he should put full MAGA on there probably.
Yeah. I think a lot of people would buy it.
So if you were to get elected as VP, would you be a Republican or an independent then?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, there's probably a practical rules-based answer to that. I don't know what
I don't
that
know
is,
that there is. It's the party decides, right? So the parties, they decide who they nominate, who they don't. As a matter of fact, up until, Bob, when did it change from just the top two vote-getters were in office together as P and VP?
I'll double-check. It was pretty quickly.
I think it was after John Quincy, if I'm not mistaken, so like sixth or seventh president maybe.
And I think,
but it used to be like the top two vote-getters would be president, vice president. Right?
1804.
So it was after Adams then. Yeah, it was Jefferson. Okay.
And then I think in 86, the Beastie Boys said you have to fight for your right to party.
And then the Mets
yep.
won the World Series against the Red Sox.
They sure did.
Yeah.
Sure did. And that changed a lot of things for everybody.
Changed a lot for Mookie Wilson.
Sure did. We appreciate you being on show today. And I'm with you, by the way. I think people should have the right to change, and hopefully you learn and everything else. And we'll see if it comes to good use, hopefully here in the future. There's a lot of people out there that are rooting for you. And it's super interesting. I don't know who he's going to pick. I would imagine the decision is going to come soon. And if you're down at Mar-a-Lago, obviously I'm going to speculate and just say you're meeting with them.
Okay. Yeah, as soon as you leave here, we're going to tell everybody you told us that you're the VP. So.
Yeah, so sorry about it. Tomorrow's show, we'll tell you everything behind the scenes. Kidding.
Thank you guys so much.
But buy the book, For the Love of Country. You can pre-order it now. It'll be shipped to your house and on your doorstep on April 30th.
That's right.
Go to iTunes, rate the show a 5-star, and leave a quick review. Also, head on over to Spotify. It's just a 5-star, and you can walk away. For D'Anthony Holloway, Tulsi Gabbard, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros Podcast. Good.